Welcome to E-Commerce Matters. E-Commerce Matters is the UK's leading e-commerce pricing podcast brought to you by Blackcurve. Each episode explores how retailers can better understand competitor pricing and use pricing insights to improve online visibility and checkout conversion. This is episode 49, not quite our 50th birthday, almost there. It's entitled The Advantages and Disadvantages of Psychological Pricing. I'm Philip Huthwaite, founder and CEO at Blackcurve. I'm joined as ever by Dr. Rob Horton, Chief Product Officer at Blackcurve. Let's get pricing. So welcome, Rob. Are you ready to talk about psychological pricing today?
I am. I think it's quite an interesting one. It's in doing my research, it turns out it's quite analogous to our price elasticity one in that there are a lot of not very good blog articles out there on it. I think it's certainly a cool one. So there's lots of kind of like tips and tricks and things that actually make a real impact. So yeah, keen.
Yeah, actually, it does follow quite nicely from our price elasticity podcast. I hadn't really thought about that, whereby we were talking about price elasticity is great when you're looking at data in a vacuum, but it doesn't account for the fact that humans are irrational and we do different things. We don't always follow what the algorithm expects us to do. So I think it'll make today's podcast fun. Just to confirm what we're going to talk today, that sounds very formal, just to introduce what we're going to talk right, today, we're going to look at the
not unusual vibe.
On today's agenda, we are looking at we're looking at the pros and cons of psychological pricing, and we'll explore how this strategic pricing approach can really be used to your advantage to influence consumer behavior and actually improve conversion. So, you know, psychology is quite a big topic. We're gonna focus just specifically on the pricing element, you'll be pleased to know. I'm not a doctor. I mean, Rob, you are a doctor, but certainly not in medicinal purposes, unless you tell me otherwise. But although that probably does make you slightly more qualified than me to talk today. But really, it's just how you can, I guess, tap into the human mindset to get a reaction, and how can you use price to get a reaction from your consumers. So without further ado, let's start with the first question, which is, what is psychological pricing? So Rob, what does it mean to you?
Well, it's a bit of a broad church, but at its core, it's when you use consumer psychology in your pricing strategy. So that's how you think your pricing can make them feel or act and change their behavior using your price. A lot of the definitions feel a bit tautological, where they say psychological pricing is when you use a customer's psychology to influence their decision. But really, yeah, it's just that, like, constructing your prices in such a way that you trigger a psychological response in the consumer, rather than just thinking of like spheres rolling around a box as your marketplace, I guess, in that kind of traditional way. Like, humans are feeling and acting and choosing, and not necessarily acting in a way that market theory would deem rational, right? So it's exploiting that or using that.
Yeah, I mean, we're all a bit odd, aren't we, in our own special way. Well, obviously, I can only speak about myself. I'm saying I am.
That's all right. Odd.
And you know, whilst interestingly, I mean, we're a very similar age, aren't we, Rob? But unless suddenly you're going to tell me, actually, I look good for 50, but we're a very similar age, and we've both sort of been joined together at Blackcurve, but to get to Blackcurve, we've both had different experiences and been exposed to different things. We've traveled to different places. We have different friends. We've got different family and so forth. And so all of that, and actually also from a shopping experience, we purchased different things online. Yep. And all of that just feeds into how we feel and how we make a purchasing decision. You know, whether we're not even sometimes conscious about our bias that has been almost imprinted on us by our past experiences. And really, that's what psychological pricing is trying to tap into, for want of a better word, because there's lots of trained behaviours that retailers have done historically. And naturally, therefore, despite the fact that, you know, Rob and I, you know, might have, you know, never bought the same product before, we've both been exposed to similar pricing techniques by the likes of Sainsbury's, Tesco's, or by the likes of Marks and Spencer's, or online at Wiggle or Snow and Rock or whatever it might be. We've all
the way you're buying pads there.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to think of what yours would be that now.
Tesco.
There we go.
And skate shops.
I was trying to think of a skate shop, but it suddenly.
Mostly, I will give a shout out to Black Sheep Skate Store, which sounds like I can't say in Manchester, who are probably take most of my money. Currently.
Well done them. But all of these retailers just do typically adopt things like, you know, their prices are pretty, they have 99p, or they have buy one get one free deals, or they have 3-for-2 offers, or, you know, things like that. And so despite the fact that we've had different experiences, we've a lot of the time have been exposed to very similar pricing strategies, you know, and we're also, you know, we'd like to say that we're pricing experts, but our past trained behaviors, our past exposure to these things does mean that we're also tricked by them from time to time, right? So it's psychological pricing is trying to effectively tap into those learned behaviors, that pattern recognition that we don't almost, you know, I'm not possibly swayed by 99p, but we are. You know, there's been so many studies by saying we are swayed by those things, and that's really what we're trying to tap into. Would you agree?
Yeah, and it's the average, right? So you may not be, but if like a statistically significant number of people are rather than aren't, then it's worth doing. So it's not all of these are applied to an individual. But on average, yeah, they do work, and they've been shown for that.
Yeah, it's a really good point. I hadn't actually thought about talking specifically today about who your buying persona is. But if you're selling branded goods, you know, that have mass market appeal, you are trying to tap into that average consumer. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, you know, the average consumer is swayed by a lot of the psychological pricing techniques, whereas if you're a retailer and you're in an uber niche category, and I'm going to maybe expose somebody in my family who you know purchases model soldiers, right? We won't name and shame them, but purchases model soldiers, right? And
yeah, you are. Actually, you've got a couple.
I do. I have quite a few in my family that purchase model soldiers. Nothing against them, but you know, if you profile those individuals that play that sort of activity, you know, they might have a different, you know, you could argue that I'm just going to get myself in all sorts of trouble here. I don't know.
No, I can bail you out. You're right. Right. So like it's there may be like a specific, I don't know, army, or I mean, that you want, and you are less sensitive on pricing around that because that's the army you want. Whereas if you're but what may happen, or where you can use say psychological pricing, we'll get into a minute, is that if you know that, like, if you've got an overrun in stock and you know people are into that specific army, you can run a discount and do it in a certain way, and you might actually end up selling a load more because people are actually waiting or want to buy, or are much more driven towards that. So there's whole bits and pieces. Whereas, yeah, if you're buying a I don't know, like a white good by and large, though it's interesting, and the example we'll get into later, this isn't strictly true, you are more likely just to go for the cheapest just because there's more competition in the marketplace as well. So it's everywhere, really, I guess, but in different ways.
So why is psychological pricing important for a business? Where do you see it? Why do you think retailers adopt it?
I'm going to say can in quotes, and we'll get into that later. It can just increase your sell through, really. It can find you new buyers, and it can get your existing buyers to buy more, increasing, and that then can support your business objective, whether that's revenue generation, profit generation, conversion, brand building, click through, whatever, really. So it's at its core, when it works, it can help build your brand identity. It can increase the number of sales you make. And then it can also sometimes even increase the profit on an individual sale, or increase the profit you make per customer by, rather than per product, by upselling and bundling and that kind of stuff. So there's a whole host of very strong reasons for doing it, really.
Yeah, you're not. I hope most retailers aren't thinking about doing it because it sounds cool and it should be, you know, everyone else is doing it, so I should be doing it. Really, if you're to implement psychological pricing as a strategy in your business, really what you're trying to do is you're trying to see if by adopting that you get a different reaction from your consumers. Okay, so if you adopt psychological pricing and your sales stay pretty much exactly the same, you know, there's an argument to say, well, actually, your consumers don't care about, or you've implemented the wrong type of psychological pricing, or they aren't swayed, or actually, nicely, you might have a product that that you're the only one who has it, or something like that. But really, what you're trying to do is you're trying to use it to see if it invokes a different reaction from what you have. So when we talk about conversion, really what we mean by that is more people are adding it to their basket than before you had the psychological pricing. What does that mean? That means increased revenue. A lot of the, well, hopefully it does, interestingly, a lot of the articles that you read do talk quite a lot about profitability. But what they don't necessarily think about is actually sometimes your rounding rule, if you've got some arbitrary rounding rule whereby you want to round it to the nearest, I don't know, £9, for example, that could sometimes just drag your price down, right?
We've had instances of that, right, where people have tested it and it hasn't worked because they've found that it doesn't have that much impact on sales and they're actually hitting their margin. So you can cause marketplace effects where you actually end up dragging the market down a bit because everyone follows you a bit further. And then just to, like, not being careful with your rounding rules, you and everyone you compete with are losing margin, and not, you're effectively artificially making a cheaper price than you need to.
Yeah, we haven't actually got this as one of the disadvantages, but so I'll talk about it now. But I hadn't actually thought about that, is that if you're the only retailer that starts adopting psychological pricing and then suddenly everybody's auto pricing off your price, the other retailers, whether they know it or not, are actually then doing psychological pricing as well. So it can be an instance where actually it might make no difference to your business. But really,
you can also, sorry, just on that, because it is a really, like, nuanced but interesting one. You can really build a snowball down by accident. If your rounding rule is to round down to the nearest, and then someone has an automatic price to continually undercut you, You just snowball down to the bottom because you round down, they undercut, you round down, they undercut, you round down, and all of a sudden you tank the market.
Well, this is where we hope they're using Black Curve safeguards to prevent that. So
exactly. safeguards.
Let's move on. So we've spoken, I guess, a bit about what psychological pricing is. We've spoken about why is it important to the business. Normally it's just to get a different reaction in sales. That's by and large why retailers adopt it. And And we haven't actually spoken about some examples of psychological pricing, because you might be listening to this going, I think I get what psychological pricing is, because Rob and Philip have been speaking about 99. They've mentioned 99 quite a lot of the time, or rounding. But it's not just that. And so I thought it'd be good to talk about an example of psychological pricing. And I'll just tee up the example that that Rob's going to take you through in a moment. So you have picked a wonderful vacuum. It's not Dyson, is it? I can see you've picked a Hoover. Goodness me, you picked an actual Hoover.
I think it's worth giving some context for this, because it's not to steal the thunder a bit, but it is interesting. So the two assumptions here is that I've always thought that Amazon's website is terrible, and that's purely from an aesthetic perspective. But in research of this, Philip said, Rob, this is a bit abstract. We need some examples. Go away and find something. And so I literally typed Hoover into Amazon. And then, as Philip's going to describe, the first page contains probably 8 to 10 instances of psychological pricing within it, which is kind of mind-blowing. And given how data-driven Amazon are, it must work, right, to some degree, which I just think it's kind of... I never really applied this lens to Amazon's website before, which is kind of mind-blowing, really.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, if you want to have a perfect example of how to adopt psychological pricing, go and have a look at Amazon's website and have a play. Mm. And if you're listening to this podcast and you're in front of a computer, go and have a look at their products, because you're absolutely right that if you're looking at Amazon's website from a purely aesthetic point of view, yeah, okay, fine, it's fairly clean, they've got it, the layout's okay, but it doesn't immediately jump out at you and go, that's not particularly pretty, right? And you look at other retailers' websites and they're all glamorous and they've got lovely imagery and they've got lovely scrolls and they don't give you much information and you have to scroll down and expand things to see information. But actually, there are so many examples on the product page of psychological pricing done well. Now, on the flip side, actually, Amazon may have just subconsciously trained us to because they are everywhere, right? And a lot of us have been customers for them for a long time. So I may be coming at it from that angle. If I'm purchasing from Amazon more than you, Rob, I'm not going to question or talk about your particular shopping habits now. But go and have a look at a product page. And Rob's picked one, which is a Hoover cordless pet vacuum cleaner, if you're in the market for one.
Type Hoover into Amazon and then click the first.
The one we're looking at is an HF122 RPT for those, and it comes with a battery as well, and it's in red and grey, and so they've got loads of different psychological pricing on show here. Do you want to take us through, sort of from top to bottom, what they're showing?
Yeah. So I think it's worth... I'll describe the kind of the layout of the page. I suggest, so most people know, if you've got the app or you've got a website, have a look at the same time, and follow along at home is probably best, but I'll try and be more descriptive. So obviously the left-hand side is a big picture and product of the product that you can kind of click through a number of images that show what it's working. So the interesting bit is actually the box to the right of that, which has, and I'll extend this slightly to, there's a lot of psychology in this and not just psychological pricing. So obviously you start with the product name, but then the immediate thing they have after that is reviews, which is social proof. And then underneath that, they've got something they're called Amazon Choice, which is like their proof. So the first thing they're saying is that, like, this is a, you don't have to worry about the quality of this product, right? We're not interested in that for the sake of the podcast, but it's interesting that, like, straight out the gate, they lead with psychology. The next thing down is a big block that says deal, and it says -8%, and then the price, which is £129. And then underneath that, it's RRP, strike through, £139.99, right? So within that deal, the discount amount, $129.99 of the RRP, there are four or five different instances of psychological pricing. So the fact that they're highlighting a deal is immediately, and the amount it is, so 8%, is an immediate kind of hook, because that creates a sense of urgency. Like, how long is this deal going to last? You're showing me and comparing it to RRP, so I can see the extent of the discount. So that's great. So I get a sense of the money I'm saving, and that adds to the urgency. What's interesting then is both the RRP and the discount price both have what people refer to as charm pricing or even pricing or that kind of thing. So the RRP is $139.99. And why is that not $140? Because people associate or have been shown to associate $139.99 with the number 139, not with the number 140, which is closest to. And even more interesting, they've even rounded the discount off. So they've made it so the discount is £129, not £130. And that's the classic rounding rules that we talk about psychological pricing. So within those three lines of a website, there's multiple instances there. And then below that, they've even got a different pricing option. So they've got, you can buy it for £22 over 6 months. And that's another way of either making it more accessible or allowing a different, like you were talking about, Philip, allowing a different user or buying pattern from a consumer, because they can then spread that out and fit that in. Whereas the consumer may not be able to afford 130 quid in 1 month, but £22 a month, sure, I can do that.
But I also see that slightly differently as well, because when I, you know, when sometimes I talk to my friends about, you know, it's generally where you've gone on holiday, or they say, oh, I'm looking to purchase this TV, what do you recommend, or something stupid like that. Clearly I've got very cool friends, but a lot of the time we talk about, when we're saying, oh, I got this, I purchased this, I don't know, these trainers, or I purchased this TV, or whatever it might be, they sometimes talk about it in point of view of, oh, actually it's sort of the equivalent of £10 a month, you know, so that actually they might have cost £100, okay, but they're rationalizing it in their own head by saying, oh, but it's only £10 a month, you know. If sometimes you're in, you're looking to purchase things, a lot of the time you reference it against, oh, it's only the price of a coffee, or you can save the price of a coffee.
So I had to replace my coffee machine recently, which those home pump ones are hugely expensive, and I had to grit my teeth to do it. But the way I justify it is that I think after 100 days, I've got my money back in coffee, effectively in coffee that I would have bought at the shop, because it turns out I can't control my impulses. So yeah, I think it's a really good point, that being able to spread it out, or that being able to think about it differently and break it into that, makes what seems like quite a scary purchase much, much more accessible.
But you're not necessarily going, in this instance, going to take them up on that 12.2% APR kind of thing. But it just, you've instantly...
No, long gone are the 0% APR days.
Yes, exactly. 12.2%. But you know, they've literally put it in your face and gone, you know, oh, actually, it's only £22 a month if you think about it that way. And you're like, oh, you know, £20 a month is nothing. Cool. Okay, I'm gonna pay £129 now, but actually, I'm gonna use my previous bias or to say, oh, it's only 20 quid, that's fine a month. I just won't buy it. I won't buy anything else. I'll forego one meal out or something a month to be able to pay for this Hoover or something like that. And it's using these, it's almost like an anchoring technique. I'm sure it also does convert people in this instance to purchase that credit, that loan amount. But I would be surprised if they're also keeping it there front and center as a way of sort of almost softening the blow of
it must work, because Klarna was so successful, and then every payment provider in the world has now adopted that technology. I mean, it's not something that I use, because I'm like you, the idea of 12.2% APR It's not something I think I'd rather not buy it.
As long as it's not 12.2% mortgage, that would, I think, I'd suddenly freak out. So what else have we got on this page?
There's one here, just while we're on these like three price things that I was thinking about, which is really interesting, which is the number 129 and the same with 139. They're quite good, like, numbers from a psychological benchmark perspective, in the how do they seem expensive to you? Do they seem cheap to you? It's kind of hard to, like, it's weird for me, but it doesn't seem like a big number or a small number, which is for a Hoover, where you kind of think it shouldn't be a big purchase or a small purchase. It's kind of quite an interesting number to use for the price point. Whereas I think if it was like 130, 140, those round numbers have more concreteness in my brain. I don't know if I'm explaining that very well, but
they've clearly testing that psychological boundary that they've gone for 129 in this instance, and your brain actually could typically see that as £120. So in this instance, so it's not even £129.99 that they're offering it. They're offering it at £129. Yeah. And so your brain, does that associate it as £120? So in that case, it's actually even cheaper. It would be really interesting to see the conversion of this if they had actually, I'm sure they have tested it at £130. It would be really interested to see if it does make a difference in terms of conversion,
because this is Amazon. I am like, I would bet that they've done the studies on this stuff. They're so data driven in this. It's it's really, really interesting to me. It's from that kind of bit of data I love, where it kind of interacts with psychology and human behavior. It'd be really interesting to know kind of the results of that study.
But they could have just done £10 off and made it £129.99, because it's retail recommended is £139.99.
Yeah, exactly. This is what I'm getting at.
It's almost unusual, randomized.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, somebody's thought about this, so it must be a good deal. It's not some arbitrary £10 off everything. It's almost like someone has handpicked this particular price, and that's really what you're trying to tap into.
Oh, so, no, yeah, you're smart, because I think also, I have to do 13999 minus 12999. I can easily see that's a tenner off, right? If you start messing with the numbers a bit, actually, like, doing quick maths on the difference becomes quite hard. So it can make the discounts bigger or better or more impactful than maybe it is, right? Because again, it's why an 8% discount? Why not 10% discount?
Because it's odd and even. So I'm just going to move us on, because otherwise we could be here for hours talking about this, which is no mean feat. But I think we've got to keep these to under an hour. So just in terms of the other things that we have,
shut up, Rob.
Just in terms of the other thing, no comment. No, I'm joking. Just in case the other things we've got on this particular page, we've got something called price lining, or also known as good, better, best, or also known as kind of anchoring. Really, what they're doing, if you scroll down any Amazon page, you'll see that they actually show the alternative options that are available. So somebody behind the scenes has been very good with their data, and they're showing you the other options. So you could get this cheaper version, which might be the good version. The current Hoover that we're talking about might be the better option, but there might be, I don't know, a Dyson Hoover or a Shark Hoover, which is £300, and that might be the best. So the good, better, best. And what they're doing is they've got a table there which compares them all and shows, well, actually, I lose out on battery time on that one, and I actually gain on, I don't know, is this cordless? Yeah, it's cordless, but I've got a cord with that one. I don't want a cord with that one. And it really just helps people to go, oh, well, the Shark one's £300. So therefore, in this particular instance, this Hoover's only £129. That's an even better deal. Mm. I'm already getting 8% off. And last but not least, what Amazon, I'm sure there's probably a few psychological pricing bits that we've missed. But last but not least, what they do really well is they use a technique to almost help the consumer spend more. It's bundling. So what they do is they show you common products that are frequently bought together, and just by simply clicking and add all three to the basket, you've been one click, they've had the option of potentially increasing the revenue from that one checkout. Oh, of course I need a second battery. Okay. Oh, of course I need a washing kit. Oh, of course I need that hook on the wall, because I don't want it to just sit on the floor and gathering dust as mine does behind the Hoover, behind the fridge, right? Okay, I want that elegant hook. And all of a sudden you've gone from just getting 129 for this particular order to getting, you know, £200 plus for this order. So
especially if you add a slight discount to the bundle, right? Because then because what you see is you often have like an expensive item bundled with cheaper, I guess, higher margin items. I guess like the main thing and accessories, and then by discounting slightly the margin or expensive at, you can shift a load of additional accessories as well. So it's cool, it's smart.
So let's move on to the advantages of psychological pricing. So where would you like to start on this, Rob?
It's a good question, really. We covered kind of a lot of them, but I guess we can recap for a few. It very much can be used to increase your margins, right? If done correctly, it can be used to get new customers who are attracted to kind of your pricing. So for example, if you're pricing like good examples where this works actually is that people do like round numbers, and they somehow feel more polished and more professional for whatever reason, and people are likely to click through on those numbers if you think of it like a branding exercise. Some of the ones we actually missed one in the previous section, which ties into it, but it's showing actually putting kind of competitors on, not just comparative products, but comparative people selling the product on Amazon do it actually on their website, but on Front Street is really impactful, because it says we're really transparent with our pricing, right? And you're effectively projecting to the consumer that we're a trustworthy company, and people buy for reasons other than price. And a lot of them is that they think they can trust you. They're going to give you their credit card details. They expect you to send them a product in a post. So that using your pricing as part of that trust building is really, really important. And that can really that can generate you new customers, and also kind of really build out existing ones. We also spoke about increasing kind of total revenue per customer or net profit per customer just by doing things like bundling or good, better, best pricing, and maybe driving them up. So say, okay, you're looking at this Hoover, but for 10, £15 more, you can get this better one. I found a really good example of this actually, not quite e-com, but is e-com. So I was looking at another company I think who does this really well, which is Apple. And I was looking at the iPhone 14. And the entry model, the memory size is, I don't know, 100 quid. And then if you want to double it, it's like 120 quid. But then if you want to quadruple it, it's like 200 quid. So it's a very small increase to go from the first one to the second one, and then a massive increase to get to the third one. And that what that tends to do is drive everyone to the middle option, which is probably what you want to sell the most of. So you can actually use psychological pricing to kind of drive consumer behavior into a product set that you either have more of or want to shift more of. I mean, it's analogous to the discounting. It's the same thing. So you can use it to reduce, like kind of move excess stock or move a certain amount of products, or kind of, in our world, you want to move it to the more profitable product, right? So you can use it in a way to channel people through these kind of comparisons to channel people to maybe a higher margin product. You end up making more money. Those are like the key ones for me really. I've kind of waffled around it a bit, but like it's really that like you can use it to get new customers, you can use it to get a higher return, and you can use it to increase revenue. And then there are just lots of different tips and techniques to do it.
I mean, the main reason that I would suggest that e-commerce companies look to adopt it is to use it to capture a new pool of buyers. So capture somebody that, you know, might not have known about you historically and might be looking to make a one-off purchase. So you increase that chances of conversion, or use the psychological pricing to make somebody attracted to your product that might not have been looking for that product, or might not have been actively looking for that product. And almost you're influencing them to make a decision now. Click, add it to the basket, put their credit card in, put their debit card in, and buy from you now. You're capturing them in that moment, or at least triggering that reaction, so that they go home over the weekend, think about it, and then buy it in a short space of time. Because we'll now move on to the disadvantages, and the reason I'm ending with that is because you need to sort of have that in mind when you're looking to adopt psychological pricing. Because if you don't, and you adopt psychological pricing badly, what you can find is that actually the consumers would have purchased from you anyway, but you then go on your merry way and implement psychological pricing, which might be a deal, might be 8% off, or as Rob's Hoover example mentioned, or you might round it down to the nearest £9, which means it's, you know, I don't know, £6 cheaper than it would have been, and that consumer was going to buy that product anyway, right? You know, you might be the only one that has that particular version of the product, or they may have purchased tons from you historically, and so they love you, so they're not going to look elsewhere because you have such great brand loyalty. So it's really important that you're aware that if you're offsetting purchases you would have already had in the bank, you're actually doing more harm than good. So make sure that you know, are my products one-off purchases? Do customers honestly keep coming back to me, or do I just get them when they need that lawnmower? How often are you going to buy a lawnmower, right? Whereas if you're it's worth thinking about that, because your revenue in that case, you know, your revenue will go down from what it could be. Are there any other disadvantages you wanted to raise, Rob?
Well, I just gotta hammer that one home. Like it really may not work, right? It's really, really industry sector specific. It's quite likely to work in kind of our area. We know rounding rules work mostly on average, or that charm pricing works quite a bit. But like it's you need to think of it as a marketing exercise, in the same way that you'd test and learn from a Google Ads campaign, with psychological pricing. It also really kind of depends on your expected demand levels. So if something's seasonal, is there really any if like the demand curves are that swingy, it's more of a stock management exercise, and you probably don't want to end up in the position where you're having to kind of well, realistically, people say it, our classic example is paddle boards in summer, isn't it, Philip? But that's what we're talking about. But like in summer you can basically charge whatever you want for them, and in winter you can't sell them for love nor money, and psychological pricing isn't gonna really make too much of a difference. So they do stuff with some kind of discounts and bundling and the rest of it, but I'm not sure how impactful that would be. The other one that I've noticed you've written down here that I quite like as well is that it's heavily tied to your brand and consumer perception of your brand. I'll go into the second example and maybe do the first one, but the second one I like because it really applies to me. So Philip's written in the doc, who buys pizza from Pizza Express without a discount coupon? And I'll add to that, I was up to dinner with some friends in Bristol, and we were chatting and we suggested Pizza Express, and they were like, it's so expensive. We went the other day and it's like, you don't have the app? I don't believe you don't have the app, because basically, I think Pizza Express's whole pricing model is based on discounts. So as a friendship group in the winter, we were going once a week, but because of the app, it was costing us £10 each or something for a meal, right? But for anyone who's going outside of that, they're probably paying for three, four times the price. And my contention at the time and now is that, like, I don't understand how Pizza Express can afford this business model. And we won't go if we don't have a discount, because it's just, we just perceive it as so expensive because we're so used to paying a tenner. So in terms of Pizza Express, which I love, but brand damage, you've kind of taken your loyal customer base and then trained them that they should probably pay paying half to a third of what you actually want them to pay through psychological pricing techniques. Now, there might be good business reasons for that, but honestly, I think we probably still would have paid 20 quid each, not 10 quid each, through the winter, even if the discounts kind of didn't exist. I don't know if that resonates or not, but...
Yeah, it does. You're effectively creating long-term pricing expectations based on the psychological pricing tests, or the you know, you, in this instance, it's a promotion to try and test a reaction to see if we can increase covers, which they've clearly done. They've clearly increased covers by giving, in the Pizza Express example, by getting people to the restaurant. But the more times you go and the more times you spend that discount, you're like, oh, happy days. You instantly have gone from a pizza costing 20 quid to the, hang on, the pizza should always cost me 10 quid. It shouldn't cost me 20 quid. So when you don't have that coupon, you're like, I'm not going at 20 quid. And then therefore you've lost them until that coupon is there. I mean, the example that I have is that my wife really likes Sweaty Betty sports clothes, okay? And so therefore, you know, around about Christmas time or a birthday time, which is different time of the year, I would always sort of go, goodness me, okay, I'll add this to her collection because she really likes sport, you know, and a pair of leggings is sort of 90 quid and it's like, holy cow, right, okay, she's not going to be happy with just a pair of leggings. I can't give her that every year, you know. And so suddenly you're spending a lot on birthday. Well, and then I suddenly noticed, I was like, hang on a minute, around about, you know, September time, they always do a 50% off. And one year they said, best ever discount, 50% off everything. You know, we've never done a deal this good. And I thought, oh, good. I'll be on the ball this year. I'll buy it in September for Christmas. So I bought a bit more because I bought it for birthday as well. So I could give her just something, you know, little and silly as well. But so I did that then, and because I thought, oh, it's not, you know, it's always 100 quid. I've never seen it like that before.
And if you're listening, he didn't do that.
She has been known to listen to these, or at least it sends the kids to sleep in the car by listening to us. But anyway, what I'm saying is that, and then that was great. And then the next year came around and I didn't think about it. And I suddenly got the email pop up going, best ever discount, 50% off everything. And I was like, hang on a minute, you said you weren't going to do this again. And they did it the next year and the next year. And so now Helen is very kitted out in Sweaty Betty clothes. No, I'm joking. But my point being is, now I will not buy it at full price because I'm like, well, they say that they're always going to give they're never going to do this discount again, but they always have such a deep discount that actually, you know, the leggings should be 45 quid. They shouldn't be 90 quid. They're always 50% off. So you just be very careful. And that's why I think generally...
Just to jump on that, there's a, like, a real pricing theory reason why that's not good. Because you've got your post-summer fashion kind of seasonal cycle where people will slash prices to dump stock because they're clearing out for autumn winter. But the fact that you're buying Christmas and birthday presents shows that's an evergreen product and doesn't need to be discounted that way, because people are going to buy it through the year, right? It's kind of like they've kind of conflated their sell cycle pricing with their evergreen product pricing, which I think is interesting, but we won't tell them, Philip, so you can keep going
away
with it.
That's true. I mean, for all we know, we don't see their sales data, so they're, you know, we might be wildly off. So I'm looking at it purely from a consumer perspective, but that has trained my behavior. So just conscious of time. So I would generally recommend, therefore, that rather than tapping into the big deep cuts of psychological pricing, you know, like 50% off everything or 25% off this, you know, I would, in the first instance, if you've not done psychological pricing before, I would actually just start by using testing the rounding rules. You know, test the to the 99p or the near. You know, the worst that's going to happen is it's going to move by a maximum of sort of 5p, right? 4p. That's not going to have a dent in your revenue. And you might just by simply doing that and rounding to the nearest 9p. See a real difference. And then if you've tested 9p, then you might want to test to the nearest 49 or 99p, and just do these small incremental tests, and test and learn and see if it actually generates any difference. Because you want to just change a small thing and nudge it and see the results. Because if you start doing, if you've not done psychological pricing historically and suddenly start doing these big sweeping pricing tests, it could cause more harm than good in terms of reputational damage, and lo and behold, long-term revenue is down. So it's fantastic. There's been so many studies that have shown that people are influenced by psychological pricing. It really, really does work. But I'd suggest that you sort of start small and test those smaller rounding rules before you have a sweaty Betty on your hands. So with that, I will summarize. That's quite the thought, isn't it? With that, I will summarize. So we've been talking about the advantages and disadvantages of psychological pricing. And really, just to recap, psychological pricing is you're using pricing to see if you can get an alternative reaction to what you would have had otherwise if you didn't have it in play. Can you encourage somebody to make a purchase that they wouldn't have necessarily done, or can you encourage them to make a price point at a different price point than they otherwise would have purchased from you? There's loads of examples of doing that. Typical one that we think of is the rounding to 99p or 999 or whatever it might be. That is the most common one, but there is also nuances to that, such as showing that this is a deal or showing that this is 8% off, 10% off. There's lots of ways that you can message to consumers that psychological pricing is in play, and it's even easier online because you have people just looking at your screen than perhaps it is in the retail shop. The main advantages is that it can increase sales. You know, who does not like an increase of sale? But you need to make sure that increase of sale is somebody who is purchasing that product that otherwise wouldn't have purchased that product at the higher price point. Because if they would have purchased that product at the higher price point, all you've done is you've sold it for less than you otherwise could have achieved. And who wants that? So we've been Black Curve. This has been E-commerce Matters, the UK's leading e-commerce pricing podcast. Until next time, happy pricing. We'll be right back.